Hello, this is Professor Tufano, and I will be talking about Chapter 4, Perceiving Others. This is in Interplay, the book Interplay, The Process of Interpersonal Communication, page 107, and I'll start by giving you a chapter outline. First, the perception process. Next, influences on perception. Thirdly, common tendencies in perception, and then finally, synchronizing our perceptions. And so that is the outline for this chapter. And on page 108, they have some pictures under figure 4.2 that are interesting, four sets of two cubes touching. And this chapter has to do with how humans perceive communication and also behavior. Differently, and how those differences impact the ability to have relationships or healthy functional relationships, I should say. So it says that statements like these, look at it my way, put yourself in my shoes, you just don't understand me, reflect one of the most common communication challenges. We can talk to or at one another until we're hoarse or exhausted, yet we still don't really understand one another. So that is kind of an interesting introduction to this chapter on perception. So if individuals perceive communication and behavior in much different ways and they don't negotiate those differences well, then it's going to be really hard to have a functional relationship with another human. So on page 109, it talks about the perception process, and the question here is, how do our perceptions affect our communication with others? And it says, reality is constructed, and steps in the perception process, and those steps are selection, organization, interpretation, and then negotiation, which all relationships have a pretty healthy component of negotiating to find that place that both parties are good with. So reality is constructed. It's an interesting idea. If you take philosophy, you may talk more about the idea that reality is constructed. So is there some objective reality out there, and or is that reality constructed at some level? So depending upon which philosopher you're talking about, they may have ideas that we're all just living a dream. This is a dream world, and one day we'll wake up. And then there's others, obviously, along different, have different philosophical views of reality, where they're all objective based upon our five senses and how we interpret those senses. So it says here, some social scientists say that the world as we know it isn't out there, but rather we create our reality with others through communication. So there is a distinction between behavior and communication depending upon which communications theorist or expert you talk to. So does all behavior have communicative value is one question that maybe we'll try to answer in the next couple of chapters. So that's kind of a big one. So when we talk about reality as constructed, it's a combination of behavior and communication. Or if you subscribe to some philosophies of communication that says that all behavior has some communicative value, it just depends. But it says here that there are two realities, first order and second order realities. So first order realities are physically observable qualities of a thing or situation. For example, the fact that your grandmother wrapped you in a big hug would be obvious to any observer. Likewise, there probably wouldn't be an argument about what word was uttered if a friend called you a bonehead. By contrast, second-order realities involve attaching meaning to first-order things or situations. Second-order realities don't reside in objects or events, but rather in our minds. So here's an example here. First-order reality, your grandmother gives you a hug. Shared second-order reality, it's appropriate for grandparents to hug their children. Yes, it is, and they should do it. And grandchildren should also hug their grandparents. Okay, first order reality. A job interviewer asks you how your day is going. A shared second order reality. This is a reasonable question for the situation. All right, so here's some problematic issues with perception and communication. Here's one. As an example, first order reality, your friend calls you a bonehead. Your second order reality, your friend's being critical. Friend's second order reality, the remark was an affectionate joke. Okay, so even though the friend said bonehead, one person interpreted it as critical and the other person interpreted it as just a friendly joke or an affectionate joke. Here's the another one. A job interviewer asks you whether you're married. Your second order reality, the question has nothing to do with the job and is inappropriate. The interviewer's second order reality, the interviewer is trying to make a conversation. So regardless if that could be an inappropriate question or not, technically, legally, maybe, but in regards to this example, these are examples where there's communication between two individuals and the sender has one intended message and the receiver has a different one and they have different perceptions. And if they don't find ways to negotiate them or to make some sense out of those and have, well, synchronized or share that meaning, then there will be a breakdown of communication. Okay, it says steps in the perception process. We attach meanings to our experience in four steps: selection, organization, interpretation, negotiation. So the first step in perception is we select the data to which we attend. Next, after we select it, we then arrange it in some meaningful way. We call this stage the organization stage. And thirdly, we interpret it. Once we've selected and organized our perceptions, we interpret them in a way that makes some sense. So interpretation is attaching meaning to sense data. This plays a role in virtually every interpersonal act or behavior. It says here, there are several factors that cause us to interpret a person's behavior in one way or another. Relational satisfaction as an idea is powerful. The behavior that seems positive when you're happy with a partner might seem completely different when the relationship isn't so satisfying. For example, couples in unsatisfying relationships are more likely than satisfied partners to blame one another when things go wrong. So if you're in a relationship and you're satisfied and things go wrong, the individuals are more likely to take personal responsibility for those actions that caused some tension between the partners. And then the inverse is true. When they're unsatisfied, they're more likely to blame the other. I know that's kind of intuitive. And then it says expectations. An expectation is another factor that shapes our interpretations. If you go into a conversation expecting a hostile attitude, then you're more likely to hear a negative tone, even if there isn't a negative tone. So that has to do with the expectation. And then lastly, it says negotiation, that the process by which communicators influence each other's perceptions through communication is known as negotiation. One way to explain negotiation is to view interpersonal communication as an exchange of stories. Scholars call the stories we use to describe our personal world narratives. These narratives often differ in their casting of characters as heroes and villains. The mass media is also famous for that as well, telling you who the good guys and the bad guys are. And as personal narratives, we do formulate our stories by identifying heroes and villains. For instance, consider a conflict between a boss and an employee. If you ask the employee to describe the situation, she may depict the manager as a heartless bean counter. Well, she sees herself as a worker who always gets the job done. On the other hand, the manager may see it quite differently. The manager is a fair boss versus the clock watcher who wants to leave early. So you could see how those narratives have certainly different perspectives. Okay, now let's talk about influences on perception. How we select, organize, interpret, and negotiate data about others is influenced by a variety of factors. Some of our perceptual judgments are affected by the information available, others by physiology, others by culture and social factors, and even psychological factors. So what influences our perceptions of communication and or behavior. Access to information is one, physiological influences, psychological influences, and social influences. So let's talk about those. Okay, so the physiological influences, the senses, the differences in how each of us sees, hears, tastes, touch, smells, stimuli can affect an interpersonal relationship. They use an example here. Turn down the radio. It's going to make me deaf. And the other person is, what are you talking about? It's not loud. It's fine. How about this one? I'm freezing in here. What are you, crazy? It's actually hot. So you can see how, physiologically, how men and women particularly identify or respond to their physical environment in much different ways. Age. We experience the world differently throughout our lifetimes. Besides the obvious physical changes, age also alters perspective. Consider, for instance, how you viewed your parents through the years. When you were a child, you probably thought they were all-knowing and flawless. At least my kids did. As a teen, you may have viewed them as old-fashioned and mean. In adulthood, many people begin to regard their parents as knowledgeable and perhaps even wise. So you can see how age does change how we perceive communication and, in this case, behavior. Health and fatigue. Recall the last time you came down with a cold or a flu or some other ailment. Health can have a strong impact on how you relate to others. How about fatigue? Being tired. People who are sleep deprived, for example, perceive time interviews as longer than they really are. One study found that when married couples don't sleep well, they have more negative perceptions of each other the following day. Biological cycles. Are you a morning person or a night person? Some people like to get up early, some people don't. Some people like to stay up late, some people don't. So each of us has a different daily cycle in regards to especially time. Hunger. Your own experience probably confirms that being hungry or having overeating affects how you interact with others, right? The old saying, hangry, being hungry and angry at the same time. Okay, moving on to physiological influences on perception. Mood, self-concept are part of this. Psychological influence. Mood. One emotional state strongly influences how we view people and events and therefore how we communicate. Good mood, bad mood, happy mood, anxious mood, critical mood influences how we communicate. Self-concept, another factor that influences perception is self-concept. For example, the recipient's self-concept has proven to be the single greatest factor in determining whether people who are being teased interpret the teaser's motives as being friendly or hostile, or whether they should respond with comfort or defensiveness. Let's talk about social influences. It says here, within a culture, a personal point of view plays a strong role in shaping perceptions. Social scientists have developed an idea theory called standpoint theory to describe how a person's position in society shapes their view of society in general and of individuals specifically. So the idea is that because we have grown up in different environments, it's easier to understand people that have grown up in similar environments and more difficult to understand people from different environments. So on one hand, it could be an extreme idea that says my people can never understand those people can understand my people, but probably it's a lot more subtle that depending upon how extreme the differences are. You could say someone who grows up in a wealthy family versus someone that grows up in a poor family, there may be some experiences that neither one of them can identify with, relate to, and maybe connect with and negotiate the differences enough to initiate and create and or maintain a relationship. But I think at the extreme, this idea, standpoint theory, I think it falls apart at the extremes. There are a lot of people who have different experiences, whether it's financial wealth or lack of it that have throughout history have created deep, meaningful relationships, even to the point where they have married and maintained long-term relationships and those kind of things. Okay, so let's move on to occupational roles and perception. The kind of work we do also governs our view of the world. Imagine five people taking a walk through a park. One, a botanist, is fascinated by the variety of trees and plants. The zoologist is on the lookout for interesting animals. The third, a meteorologist, is keeping an eye on the sky, noticing changes in the weather. A fourth, a psychologist, is totally unaware of the ongoings of nature, concentrating instead on the interaction amongst the people in the park. The fifth, a pickpocket, quickly takes advantage of others' absorption to collect their wallets, especially if the individuals are on their phone texting and not paying attention to the world. That pickpocket has an easy job. There are two lessons in this little story. First, of course, is to watch your wallet. Don't text and be distracted. Secondly, the occupational roles frequently govern our perceptions, what we latch onto. Such is true. Relational roles. Think back to the who I am, if you did that list that's in chapter 3. But they talk about the various roles. It says, take, for example, the role of a parent. As most new mothers and fathers will attest, having a child alters the way they see the world. They may perceive their baby crying as a helpless soul in need of comfort, whereas strangers may be less charitable in their appraisal. The roles involved in romantic love can dramatically affect perception. These roles have many labels: partner, spouse, boyfriend, girlfriend, and so on. There are times when your affinity biases the way that you perceive the object of your affection. You may see your sweetheart as more attractive than others do, or as more attractive than your previous partners, regardless of whether it's objectively accurate. Okay, on page 123, Common Tendencies in Perception. By now, it's obvious that many factors affect the way we interpret the world. Social scientists use the term attribution to describe the process of attaching meaning to behavior. Attribution is the process of attaching meaning to behavior. We attribute meaning to both our own actions and the actions of others, but we often use different yardsticks. Okay, it says here we make snap judgments. We cling to our first impressions. We judge others more charitable than ourselves. We are influenced by our expectations. We're influenced by the obvious, and we assume others are like us. So, we make snap judgments. It says here our ancestors often had to make quick judgments about strangers who were likely to be dangerous. And there are still times when this ability can be a survival skill. That's true. So if you are pumping gas and somebody approaches you or startles you or walks towards you, and there doesn't seem to be any reason that you're aware of that they would want to approach you and talk to you or ask you questions, you may be concerned that the stranger may be dangerous at some level. And so what kind of behavior would you enact, or what kind of communication would you engage in with that individual? It says that there are many cases when judging others without enough information or knowledge can get us into trouble, and in other cases it also protects us. Despite the risks of rash decision-making, in some circumstances, people can make surprisingly good choices. And Malcolm Gladwell has written a really good book that you should get. I'm trying to figure out which specific book. I do recommend that you read all of Malcolm Gladwell's books. They're awesome. Outliers, The Tipping Point. The one they're referring to here in the book is called Blink. He has David and Goliath, What the Dog Saw, Talking to Strangers. There's a couple, but I love reading his books. I've read all of them. They're referring here to snap judgments, and it says here, despite the risks of rash decision-making, in some circumstances people can make surprisingly good choices in the blink of an eye. And that's from the book Blink. I do recommend it. It says 2004. So look it up and get it and read it, and you'll get extra credit. not in points, but I mean internally, you'll feel better for sure. Okay, so snap judgments can be, snap judgments could be good judgments. Of course, the inverse is also true. Typically, the more time we have, the more information we have. Typically, if we can weigh the pros and the cons to a decision and we have time to do them, usually we'll make better decisions. But oftentimes, we don't have that, so we have to make snap decisions. Okay, we cling to our first impressions. Snap judgments are significant because our initial impression of others carry more weight than the ones that follow. This is due in part to what social scientists call the primacy effect. All right, so let's talk about we cling to first impressions. So some of those common tendencies in perception, besides we make snap judgments, we also cling to first impressions. And this idea of the primacy effect, it says here. Our tendency to pay more attention to and to better recall things that happen first in a sequence. So with some, it was like at first sight. With others, your initial appraisal when it comes to liking somebody may have been negative, and then maybe over time you change the way you felt about the individual, right? So they call that the primacy effect. There's another term here, halo effect. It describes a tendency to form an overall positive impression of a person on the basis of one positive characteristic. Positive first impressions are often based on physical attractiveness, which can lead people to attribute all sorts of other virtues to good-looking people. So on the inverse of that is called the horn effect. And it says this occurs when a negative appraisal adversely influences the perceptions that follow. So you have the halo effect, and then you have the horn effect. And then here's, and then it says here, once we form a first impression, whether it's positive or negative, we tend to seek out and organize our impressions to support that opinion. Psychologists use the term confirmation bias to describe this process. For example, subjects in an experiment were asked more suspicious questions when they believed that a suspect had been cheating on a task. The same bias occurs in job interviews. Once a potential employer forms a positive impression, a tendency to ask questions that confirm the employer's image of the applicant. Kind of makes sense. It's called the confirmation bias. And then we judge ourselves more charitable than we do others. Now, there's a shocker to most of you. It says here, whereas we may evaluate others critically, we tend to judge ourselves more graciously or generously. That's true. Scientists, social scientists use two theories to explain this. First, it's called the fundamental attribution error. Fundamental attribution error, the tendency to give more weight to personal qualities than the situation when making an attribution. For instance, if someone you know makes a hurtful comment and you're likely to chalk it up to flaws in his or her character than to external factors. We're more charitable when we judge ourselves. This self-serving bias means that when we perform poorly, we usually blame external forces and we credit ourselves rather than the situation that we blame that and we credit ourselves rather than the situation when we behave well. So that kind of makes sense, right? The self-serving bias. Consider a few examples. When they botch a job, we think they weren't listening. When we make the mistake, the problem was unclear directions. When they make an overly critical comment, it's because they're insensitive. When we do, it's constructive criticism. When they use profanity, it's because of a flaw in their character. When we use profanity, it's because the situation called for it. Yeah, that's basically a combination of fundamental attribution error and self-serving.